Greetings, everyone. Here is a little bonus content, courtesy of Scott Wells, a little bit more about Rosa Parks, his teenagehood, and that very strange Ouija board. You know, I wanted to ask, while you were having this experience when you were, I think you said 16, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So was there a part of yourself, your mind, that thought, what is happening? I don't know what's going on here. And why did you trust what was going on?
So at 16, teenagers, they think they know everything. And, you know, I was no different. As a matter of fact, one of the things that's in the book that not a lot of people understand is I wasn't living at home with my parents. So at 16, I thought I knew more than I did. And I told them that I was tired of living under their rules. And my dad, who is pretty strict, he's like, well, if you don't like it, then get out. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. So I ended up moving in with my boss. And where this happened, it was actually at my boss's house. His dad had given him, his dad had was into real estate and had several houses in town, had given him one. And he was a couple of years older than me. And so I moved in there. So when this experience happened, I was in that frame of mind that I'm like, oh, this is great. I am 16. I'm still going to school, but I'm not living under my parents' rules. And I don't have anyone to tell me what I can and can't do. And you know, I thought I was invincible. And even though I'd heard all of the stories about what had happened with other people, I still didn't believe it. And as this was playing out, it wasn't, even as this was playing out, I still didn't believe it. It wasn't until about 10 years after, when I was talking to Darcy and she had told me that Trent had died in a car accident and that the house burned down. That's, at 10 years later, I was 26, around 26 at the time, my view on life had changed. My mind had changed. I'd grown up a little bit more and it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was something that you can't deny. I think I went through a period where I didn't believe it. But hearing that story corroborated by her, or it was him, but I didn't imagine it or I didn't dream it. I mean, it was something that really happened. 10 years later, when I was talking to her and she told me that Trent had died in a car accident, just the way that it was threatened and that the house burned down at that point. I mean, there was no way that I could deny it. That's when the guilt really hit. It was my board and it was Trent that lost his life. I think I mentioned earlier that, I sort of make a lot of bad decisions and I was homeless for a while. And I just, I needed to pull it together and change my life. And, it's things that you can't deny.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting. I mean, first of all, you've shared some really gorgeously powerful stories from your life. And now you've just told me that you weren't living at home when this happened and you'd moved out. And let me tell you, when I was in high school and I was like 16 or 17, I was like, I don't know, but all the older people around me, I think, are pretty stupid. So I think I kind of know everything and everybody's trying to block me and all the amazingness that I can bring into the world. So I totally get what you're saying right now. But I wanted to ask, I think it's fascinating. You were still Mormon because after that, you went on your 2-year mission, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I was going to say, so I lived there for about a year and a half. And when for my senior year, I actually moved back in, by that point, I'm like, this has been fun. But I really, you know, I'm tired of taking my laundry over to their house. You know, I'd rather just, you know, have my mom do my laundry, you know. So I ended up moving back when I was a senior. And that's when I just carried on with my life and ended up going on my mission and everything. So it was a weird period, but you know exactly what I'm talking about because you felt the same way.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think so many other people have.
Yeah, I think, you know, they call it in my little patch of the woods, the Midwest, they called it senioritis. And you'd start getting it when you were a junior and you're like, I just want to fly the coop, but I have this one more year that I have to do. And then my mom was just like, dear God, this is totally crazy. What's happening here? But I want to just pull something in. That is why I think the meeting with Rosa Parks and establishing this relationship with her where she was staring down the ice cream man for you is really precious because, you know, from your profile that I read, it seemed like you lost everything at one point. And then there was Rosa Parks who made you feel heard and seen and listened to and appreciated and someone who deeply looked forward to you visiting every week. I was thinking, my God, you know, not only did she change the law of the land in the US, but still, even as she got older, she was showing up for people of all kinds. And how incredible is that?
You know, I, to be honest, I never thought of it that way. I never thought that she showed up for me, but she absolutely did. She was amazing. And, you know, her example, you know, because, you know, the whole incident with the bus and how she changed the course of history was before I was born. So, and of course, it's things that they didn't teach in Idaho, you know, at the time. So it made it even more special not knowing who she was. And here is this lovely woman who clearly is important because we had to take her Rosa Parks Boulevard to get to her house. But she showed me humility. She showed me that, that experience lasted years later, because when I thought about it, I'm like, here is someone that has every right to be an egomaniac. And she was the complete opposite of that. I thought about that over the years. I thought, you know, especially that's one of the things that kind of triggered me, that when I went to Detroit for that trade show, I'm going to go visit her grave because I want to talk to her. I want to tell her how I feel and how much meeting her and getting to know her has changed my life and the lessons I've learned from that. And the biggest lesson was, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter who you are. What matters is how you treat people. And that was one of the biggest lessons I learned from her. And that is something that, you know, it's a daily, you know, I think I'm a pretty good person. I think I treat people well, but, you know, there's sometimes I get frustrated, you know, when people change lanes without a turn signal or just the different things, you know, that drive you crazy, but, and that's human. And I attribute this to her, is I want to be able to be a better human. I want to be a better person. And I think back to her where, you know, she probably had those same feelings, you know, and frustration. But as far as my experience with her, she never let that show. She never heard her talk bad about someone, even considering the experience that she went through and the life that she lived before that and after that. I never heard her talk bad about it. And that's a powerful lesson that I think, you know, that I would hope that I've learned and I've taken applied to my life, but that we can all apply, you know, we can, because it's, if there's anyone that has a right to be jaded or bitter or an egomaniac, it's her. And she just wasn't. She was, and that was special.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, you know, this life is really hard anyway. I mean, just in general for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. And when you find that person that makes you feel included or that you belong, yeah, or that you found a safe place to be yourself, the price is beyond rubies. It's just the best thing ever.
You know, I have to mention, you know, just make one more comment, because about what you had just said about her making me feel heard and listened. So, you know, obviously, you know, growing up in that environment, being gay and, you know, and not being able to be, to live the life or be the person that I truly felt that I was inside. When I was on my mission, I never, you know, that didn't even come into play. I didn't think about it, you know, but obviously I was still gay. But, and so she and I never talked about that, but I remember feeling that I was living a lie, you know, because I was pretending to be someone that I wasn't. And, you know, when you said that she made me feel heard, I mean, that I didn't think about it till now, but that hit me like a ton of bricks just now, because she did, when I was going through that, even though I wasn't really dealing with it on my mission internally, I was, and maybe I went on my mission as a way to try to change myself, for force myself to change. And she let me know, you don't have to change for anybody. You, doesn't matter what happens in your life, doesn't matter what you go through, you are who you are, and you have the right to stand up and be who you are. And I didn't think about that until you just made that comment. So that was a very powerful question and a comment. So I thank you for that. That brought a whole new understanding that I hadn't thought of before.
I hope you all enjoyed this tiny little bonus episode about Scott and a little bit more information about Scott's life and interaction with Rosa Parks. One of the things I really wanted to illustrate this week was, we never know when we're going throughout our lives when we're going to meet someone who completely changes it. As well, I think it goes to illustrate that each and every moment we are alive, we have the chance to make someone's life better. So I hope you take that with you this week, and I hope you enjoyed this bonus episode.